Hello, 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 and welcome to Degree of Difficulty. My name is Aaron Johnson. I appreciate you rocking with me wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and share with your friends, family, including grandma and ma down the street. In this week's episode, I'm going to talk about the NBA trade deadline, meaning it's going to be my first Knicks rant since coming back. I'm going to take a look at Major League Baseball and all the recent moving and shaking in the offseason that's been going on there. And I'm going to wrap things up with a dive into the current state of men's college basketball with fan-sided contributor Richard J. Adkins. But before all of that, I'm going to kick things off with some of this. You know, it feels really good to be right. You know, you feel good. You feel justified in the way that you were thinking of things. And it just feels good, you know, not only to be right about a certain game, to be right about a certain player, but just to just be right, you know what I mean? Just to have it all correct. And that's how I feel after the Super Bowl on Sunday. I did call it correctly. Score was a little bit off, but I did call it correctly. I had the Kansas City Chiefs winning, and they went on and did that 31-20 over the San Francisco 49ers. I had Patrick Mahomes as the MVP. He didn't have the dominant game that I thought he was going to have. 26 of 42 for 286 yards, two touchdowns, two really bad, unlike Patrick Mahomes, interceptions. And he also ran nine times for 29 yards and obviously that first touchdown. But the player I was right about, it wasn't Patrick Mahomes. It wasn't Patrick Mahomes. The player I was right about was Jimmy Garoppolo, because I said it, folks. I said it, people. I said it. I said it. I said it. I say on some foghorn leghorn. I said it. Jimmy Garoppolo cannot and would not win the game for the Niners, and he had to. He had to, and he couldn't do it. He's not that kind of quarterback, especially not against Patrick Mahomes. Not when you're going up against an offense that can put up 21 unanswered in the fourth quarter after being down for most of the fourth quarter. They scored 21 unanswered. Come on now. And don't worry, I'm going to get to Kyle Shanahan in a bit, because Kyle Shanahan, I was leaning towards getting on the bandwagon. I'm off it now. Clean off the bandwagon now. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. But Jimmy G, Jimmy Garoppolo, he doesn't have it in him yet. He's not the kind of quarterback that you can expect and look to carry an offense. And he showed it. He showed it. He absolutely 100% proved me right. Because what I said last week and what I'm standing on this week, he's not the kind of guy that can lead your team. You're going to need him to make a couple of big throws in this situation, and he couldn't do it. I think of the bad interception with his eyes closed. That's just pathetic. I think about the long pass that could have changed everything with Emmanuel Sanders. He missed Emmanuel Sanders by about 5 or 6 yards, and that could have changed everything. Emmanuel Sanders catches that pass, he's in the end zone. And we're talking about a whole different game here. Deebo Samuel had a great game, but Deebo Samuel, he just was nowhere to be found. He couldn't find Samuel. He couldn't find Sanders. George Kittle only had 4 catches for 36 yards. George Kittle is arguably the best tight end. He did have 7 targets, but only 4 catches. I hate to be right like this. I really hate to be right like this, but I got to be right when I'm right. Jimmy Garoppolo is not the type of quarterback that can put the team on his back and get them in a situation where they need a field goal late, or they need to keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes in the Chiefs' hands, or they need that big throw. He's not that guy, not in a big situation like this, not in a big game like this, and we saw it on Sunday. And now to Kyle Shanahan. You know, the old saying goes, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I don't get it. I don't get it, Kyle. Dude. Like, your dad was a running coach. He had Terrell Davis. You've had this you yourself have had this three-headed monster all season in Tevin Coleman, Raheem Mostert, and Matt Breida. You've had this running attack that people have feared. You have made defenses quit on your road to the Super Bowl. They quit. They made the Vikings quit. They were running the ball so well that Minnesota just gave up. And yet, with the lead in the Super Bowl, after a turnover, it was 20-10. I want to say maybe like 10 minutes left in the game. That was the point where I said, wow, this really might be over. Patrick Mahomes just didn't show up to play, which he didn't for 3 quarters. All you have to do with this amazing running attack that you have, is run the football. That's all you have to do. Run the football. And he didn't do it. He trusted Jimmy Garoppolo. And look at it now. We're in a repeat of when he was the OC for the Falcons, where all they had to do was run the football. If I'm Tevin Coleman, and I've been in this situation twice now, I'm looking at Kyle Shanahan and saying, dude, please. At this point, please, something, anything. Anything. If the Niners run the ball in that situation with the 10-point lead, with about 10 minutes left in the game, they're hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. That's just the reality of the situation. KC wasn't going to get the ball back. And if they did, they weren't going to get the ball back in enough time to score 10 points. Yes, they scored 21 unanswered, but the 21 unanswered came because they were able to get the ball over and over again because Kyle Shanahan kept trying to throw it. Watching that game was so frustrating, and I'm not even a Niners fan. I'm not even a Niners fan. That game was frustrating to watch because you have the ideal situation. You're up 10. You got the best player in the NFL on his worst day. They caught Patrick Mahomes on his worst day as a professional quarterback in the biggest setting. You got a 10-point lead, 10 minutes to go. You got this crazy running attack. All you got to do is run the ball. All you got to do is run the ball. The Niners had 22 carries for 141 yards as a team with one touchdown. Raheem Mostert had that by himself. He had more than that by himself in the NFC title game. Mostert only had 12 carries. He only had 12 carries. You gave him the ball 22 times in the NFC title game. You only gave it to him 12 times. Kyle Shanahan, dude, please. Don't think too hard, bro. Like, you're doing too much. This is the equivalent. This is the exact example of doing too much. All he had to do with a 10-point lead was hand the ball off a couple times. And the one series that really showcased that was the last series before Casey had that touchdown to Damian Williams. And Damian Williams had a great game, 17 carries, 104 yards, and a touchdown, including a receiving. Well, he had two touchdowns. He had a receiving one, four catches for 29 yards, and a receiving touchdown, that last touchdown I'm about to talk about. And he, again, 17 carries, 104 yards, and a touchdown. So Damian Williams truly should have been the MVP of the Super Bowl, but I understand it going to Mahomes, plus it makes me right, so I can't get too mad about that. But the situation that showed immediately that Kyle Shanahan was overthinking was when right before that second-to-last touchdown Kansas City scored, where Williams caught the pass, and we didn't know if he was over the pylon, but it gave KC the lead. Right before that drive, on first down, the Niners had the ball. They handed the ball off to Raheem Mostert. He got 5 yards. First down, he got five, six yards. So now you're looking at second and four, second and five. You got the lead. You got the ball in your own territory. I believe they're around like the 25, maybe the 30. All you got to, you just ran on first down for 5 or 6 yards. Raheem Mostert didn't touch the ball the rest of that drive, which of course was the three and out because you had Jimmy Garoppolo as your quarterback. It made no sense. It made absolutely no sense. So, of course, all kudos, of course, to the Kansas City Chiefs. Really, really happy for Andy Reid. He finally got his one. That's all he needed. He was going to the Hall of Fame anyway, but all he needed was that one. You can thank Kyle Shanahan's horrible game planning for that in the fourth quarter. You know, there's some years where nothing really happens in the NBA trade deadline. Nothing really pops off. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors, and nothing eventually happens. All rumors. That wasn't the case this year. We had a ton of deals go down. Adrian Wojnarowski's phone was blowing up. His Twitter feed was blowing up. My phone was blowing up. It was great. It was absolutely great. Some of the things that really just jump out at you is a situation between Memphis and Miami over Andre Iguodala. That whole thing was nuts, where it had Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks telling Andre Iguodala, we don't care how many championship rings you got. We don't want you on this team. You don't want to play here, but we're going to come see you wherever you end up. He ended up in Miami. He ends up in Miami for Justice Winslow, Deion Waiters, and James Johnson. And so it's kind of great for Miami. Right now, they're sitting at number 4 in the Eastern Conference. They pick up a veteran who's been there, who's played in these big moments, in Andre Iguodala. They also got Solomon Hill and Jay Crowder, so that's nothing to scoff at either. Miami has really been good this season, so you add in those other two guys plus Andre Iguodala, and so that's already, boom, huge deal there. And then a couple hours later, you get the mega deal with D'Lo, with D'Angelo Russell going from Golden State, where he was for all of 13 minutes, all of the first quarter, and now he goes off to Minnesota, where they wanted D'Angelo Russell because of his friendship with Karl Anthony Towns, because of the fact that they really were looking for a true blue point guard, and they gave up enough that showed that they wanted D'Angelo Russell. The trade goes down. D'Angelo Russell goes from Golden State to Minnesota for former number one pick and really someone who has never lived up to the hype in Andrew Wiggins, a 2021 protected first round pick and a 2022 second round pick. The Warriors also sent Jacob Evans and Omari Spellman, but who cares about that, because we're here to talk about D'Lo. D'Lo goes from an all-star last season, huge season with the Nets. He goes out to California. He signs with the Warriors thinking, oh, wow, they're going to have this huge, great threat. Klay Thompson might come back by the end of the year. Who knows if they're in playoff position? They might be jockeying. That didn't happen. Steph goes out, so now he's done. We don't know if he's going to come back, but he's done. You got D'Lo going there. It's not really working out. He's averaging over 20 points this season again, but he's not fitting there. He's not. So now you get this trade if you're Minnesota. Minnesota is at the cellar. Minnesota, the last time Karl Anthony Towns won a game was in November, and that's not even me using hyperbole. That's an actual stat. By the time I'm doing this podcast, they hadn't won a game since November. So that's already, they get better in that sense, but how much better are the Timberwolves going to be? Seriously. And I've already said it. I said it to my friends before in the group chat. I guarantee Andrew Wiggins and Draymond Green are going to have at least one fight in practice that's going to get all the people up in arms sometime in either this year or by the beginning of next year. One thing we learned about Andrew Wiggins since Jimmy Butler was down there is that Andrew Wiggins is soft. He's soft. And that's one thing Draymond Green isn't, is soft. So I already think that's going to be a match made in hell. Although he's going to add something to, potentially, to Golden State in the same way that Harrison Barnes added something to their first championship team. But if I'm Minnesota, I think they just wanted to get rid of Wiggins, wash their hands of it, and deal with Kat while also getting his best friend. If you guys remember, Karl Anthony Towns went number one in that draft. D'Angelo Russell went number two. And that draft really wasn't that long ago. That was the draft with Porzingis going to the Knicks. And don't worry, I'm getting to the Knicks. Please don't think I'm not getting to the Knicks. But that's a big deal for them. So it's not going to do anything this season because they suck. But maybe next year they can do something. Maybe add a piece here or there. They got two young studs. Because although Karl Anthony Towns, I have my issues with him, he's still a top, you know, big man in the game. D'Angelo Russell still has the potential to be one of the best point guards in the game. I mean, he was an all-star last year. He shows promise. He can score the basketball. He has a really nice game. He can lead a team. We saw what he did in Brooklyn last year. And they'll say, like, oh, well, we don't know. That Brooklyn team was nowhere before D'Lo got there. D'Lo got there, and now they're in the playoffs. And truthfully, they had a real shot in that series against Philly last year. He was an all-star last year. D'Lo's a good player. He is. Cat's a good player, so who knows what can happen in Minnesota. They have potential, just not this year. The only other deal that was, you know, worth mentioning is one between Cleveland and Detroit, which is weird. Andre Drummond going in division to the Cavaliers. That just didn't make sense. I don't know what Detroit is doing. I think Detroit has kind of given up on basketball. I got nothing, to be honest with you. That trade just makes no sense to me in any way, shape, or form. I will say this about Miami really quick is the fact that they got Iguodala. They tried to get Danilo Gallinari. If they were able to do that, that would have been a huge move for them. That really would have been. That would have been interesting because Gallo brings something where he's able to stretch the floor. He can do a lot with the ball. He's already shown that he can score. So that's something that's nice. I think big men have just taken a backseat because you looked at Dwayne Dedmon, who got traded from Atlanta to Sacramento. That was for Jabari Parker and Alex Lynn. So you got these big men that aren't really doing too much. I know Capella got traded too. That was supposedly like the big deal prior to everything, you know, hitting the fan a couple days ago. Capella's trade. And Capella really hasn't been that good for a while, if you ask me. It's kind of just I saw the trade. I know it got a lot of, you know, fanfare because everybody was like, oh, Clint Capella's going. Clint Capella can't stay healthy. Clint Capella really has – his game hasn't gotten really any better. He's a shot-blocking, rebounding guy in a league where the spacing is so much that it's hard to kind of have that stalwart anchor in the middle like a Ben Wallace or something. Like, you don't really have too much of those anymore. You got guys that are able to stay out on the perimeter and then work their way around being the shot blocker. Like, Giannis can be out on the perimeter and he turns into a shot blocker. And Clint Capella is good. He's solid. But I didn't get hyped over the Clint Capella thing. Now on to my Knicks. And on to the team that I have the misfortune of enjoying. And like I said, I try not to have too many rants about, you know, my favorite team simply because, you know, they're my favorite teams. I don't want to go ahead and just bombard people with all of the stuff that, you know, just it's my favorite team. I get it. You know, everyone's going to have their bias. But I have been a Knicks fan, and it is frustrating to be a Knicks fan. The Knicks currently, as I'm doing this episode, are sitting at the cellar in their normal habitat. 16 wins on the season, 36 losses, 28 and a half games out of first seed in the Eastern Conference. So as you guys might imagine, I've been looking at college prospects since about tip-off of game number 4 this season. So the Knicks have done so many things wrong, and they actually did something right yesterday, which I'm not crazy about, but I at least say they did something right. Marcus Morris is having a career year. Marcus Morris has put up great numbers in 43 games with the Knicks. He started all 43. He's averaging 19.6 points a game. He's averaging 5-point rebounds a game, and he's averaging 1.4 assists while also shooting 42% from the field. So he's having a good year. He's having a very good year, career year for him. The most points he's ever averaged before the season was 14 points. He's averaging close to 20. He's going to be a really nice piece for the Clippers. The Clippers, in return, go ahead and send Mo Harkless and his expiring contract to the Knicks, along with a 2020 first-round pick, the rights to a 2021 first-round pick swap with the Clippers, as long as that pick isn't 1 through 4, a 2021 second-round pick from Detroit. So that's not a bad haul. Washington was also in the deal. It was kind of weird. Isaiah Thomas got traded to the Clippers and he got waived. It sucks to be Isaiah Thomas right now. I hate to say it because I think he's getting a raw deal. But the Knicks did something right. They went ahead. They got somebody who's having a career year off of their team because Marcus Morris is 30, 31 years old. That he wasn't going to be the future of the Knicks. He wasn't. The future of the Knicks starts with RJ Barrett right now. It started with Kevin Knox the year before that. It started with Frank Ntilikina the year before that. You see what I'm doing here? It keeps going backwards and backwards. The Knicks have been going backwards for years. This is actually a pick that is making them go forward. They get a little bit of draft capital. They have their first-round picks. They have a couple first-round picks. Even though this is going to be a later first-round pick because the Clippers are most likely, barring some kind of craziness, going to be playing, and at the very least, the Western Conference Finals, this is going to be some kind of pick that the Knicks can use in the first round, which is something they haven't had in a very long time. Draft capital. They'll be able to do something in the future. Let's say go ahead and draft a bunch of guys that play like Kevin Knox right now. And again, Kevin Knox is still young. I'm not trying to kill him, but dude, please. The Knicks have an opportunity here to do something good, and I'm excited about it. They also did another move this week, which I felt good about it when it happened. I did. I felt good about it when it happened. The Knicks fired Steve Mills as their president. I said, okay, that makes sense. It's been rumored for months that the Knicks want to go after Masai Ujiri, the guy who orchestrated the Toronto Raptors team, a.k.a. brought Kawhi Leonard to Toronto, giving them their first championship. Masai Ujiri has been a name that has swirled around New York and Madison Square Garden for months because you sit there, you say, Masai Ujiri, could he be the guy that comes in? And can he be the guy that does what someone like Phil Jackson couldn't do? Could he be the person that comes in and builds the Knicks up to their former glory? I actually let myself believe, you know, maybe Masai Ujiri could come to New York. Maybe. I actually gave myself that thought. Silly me. Because you know what I did? I forgot who owns the New York Knicks. That's what I did. James Dolan owns my team. What? Oh, man. I completely forgot. Silly me. James Dolan. The worst owner in the city of New York. And that's actually really hard to do. He's the worst owner in New York. They tell him to sell the team constantly. I have said sell the team. Knicks fans have said sell the team. People that aren't Knicks fans say sell the team. So in all his infinite incompetence, What he does is not go after Masai Ujiri, not go after an established guy. He goes the route of Rob Pelinka and the Lakers. He goes the route of Bob Myers and the Warriors. And he goes after a guy in Leon Rose who's a former agent. And now he's planning on being the next president of the New York Knicks. I will say this, and I will try and keep my cool about it. If Leon Rose becomes the president of the Knicks, there's nothing I can do about it. I have to just sit back and see what happens. And I will give Leon Rose a lot of credit and say, hey, if he builds a championship team, if he builds a team that can get out of the first round, if he builds a team that can win the division, if he can build a team that can win more than 35 games, then yeah, Leon Rose deserves credit. But being a Knicks fan and understanding how the Knicks like to operate and understanding how our owner likes to operate, I kind of can't hold my breath. I just can't. I really can't. Getting rid of Steve Mills was a good deal. Nobody understood why Steve Mills was in that position. He got that job right after Phil Jackson and all the terror that was Phil Jackson. But I don't really know anything about Leon Rose. I know he was an agent. He's clients with a bunch of big name players like Karl Anthony Towns, like Devin Booker, like Carmelo Anthony, Chris Paul, Joel Embiid. So he's got some pull with some guys. And this is a formula that has been done before. It's a model that's gained popularity, like I said, with Myers in Golden State and with Pelinka in the Lakers. And really, Pelinka, if I'm being honest, he only looks good because he got LeBron. And really, LeBron kind of got him, if you think about it. Because LeBron James, we've all known for years, after he got that championship in Cleveland, he could go wherever he wanted. And everything was swirling around the fact he wants to get into Hollywood. He wants to make sure his family is good and set. He wants to make sure Bronny's in the best school, not only educationally, but also on the hardwood. So going to L.A. was really kind of ideal. Magic Johnson was still there, so that kind of helped with him going to the Lakers. So the Pelinka, we got to see how Pelinka's going to do now, because I don't even give him credit for Anthony Davis, because Anthony Davis is only in L.A. because of LeBron James. It's a model that has gained popularity. So the Knicks saying, hey, you know, let's keep up with the trends. Let's keep up with the Joneses. See what we can do here. And normally, under the circumstances, I would be like, hey, you know, everybody's doing it. It seems to work out for a couple people. The Warriors have won a couple championships. You know, the Lakers are looking like they're going to be at least in the Western Conference Finals this year. So, you know, it's working out. But then I remember who the owner is. And then I remember that, oh, yeah, we're the Knicks and James Dolan is our owner. And things don't usually work out for us the way they work out for everybody else. So that's what I'm looking at. I'm not looking at the fact that he fired Steve Mills. I'm not looking at the fact that everybody else is doing it. I'm looking at the fact that Masai Ujiri was supposed to be coming to Madison Square Garden. He's not. We got some guy named Leon Rose, who, again, all credit to you, Mr. Rose. Maybe you can come in and you do some great stuff. I don't know. But looking at who the owner of my team is and looking at how absolutely incompetent, inept, horrible, disgraceful, and pathetic the Knicks have been under this owner, I'm not holding my breath for nothing. I'm not. So here's to see what happens. Leon Rose, if he becomes the president of the New York Knicks, let's see what happens. The Knicks are 1-0 right now since Steve Mills was fired. Let's see how long this win streak goes on. Good trade getting rid of Marcus Morris. Good trade bringing back draft capital. Now they got a draft right. And that starts with the president. That starts with the guy who's running the basketball operations. Let's see what's going to happen here. The Knicks are set up. I sound angry. I'm not angry completely. I'm not. The Knicks are set up better than they have been in decades. In at least 20 years, the Knicks are set up. So, you know, that's not a terrible thing. It's not a terrible place to be in. But then you remember it's the Knicks. You remember that your owner is James Dolan. And then you just got to pray. You know, it's kind of funny. Even though pitchers and catchers report next week, I wasn't really expected to talk a lot about baseball until at least spring training started. But the Red Sox made sure that wasn't going to be the case. They went ahead and traded Mookie Betts and David Price to the Dodgers this week. And there's been a lot of backlash coming from that. I looked into a lot of this stuff and I read a bunch of stories on it. And truthfully, and I'm not just saying this as a Yankee fan, it makes a lot of sense. The Red Sox are not in that upper echelon of teams anymore in the AL. The Yankees are, the Astros, despite everything that's going on in Houston this offseason, they still are. They won the pennant last year. The Twins are better. The Indians are still a little bit better. So if you're looking at the Red Sox, this kind of wasn't a bad move. Mookie Betts is set to test free agency next year and make upwards of $400 million. Now, if you think about that, the Red Sox had also already offered him about $300 million to stay in Boston. Now, Betts is 27 years old. He's a 2018 AL MVP. He's one of the top 3 to 5 baseball players in Major League Baseball. You know, after Trout, kind of shuffled those guys around a bit. But he's up there. He's really high up there. And like I said, at 27 years old, he's young. The Dodgers get him. The Dodgers get David Price. The Red Sox get Alex Verdugo, who's a Major League Baseball player. He's not really a prospect. He played 106 games last year with the Dodgers, so he's been to the show. You know what I mean? He's not he's a nice piece. He's not a huge showstopper, but he is there to fill a void that Mookie Betts creates in that outfield. They also get a pitcher coming in from the Twins. The Twins were in this deal, 3-team deal. They picked up Kenta Maeda, the pitcher coming from the Dodgers. So a lot of moving and shaking, but all in all, this helps Boston because it allows them to do what they wanted to do in the first place, which was get under the luxury tax. Prior to this trade going through, the Red Sox were projected to finish nearly $20 million over the luxury tax line, which would have killed some of the things they would have been able to do in the future because of all the penalties that would have come with that. So now you get rid of Betts in his contract, or the contract he is going to sign after he becomes a free agent next year. And he had already told the Red Sox that he was going to test free agency. So you get rid of that contract. You get rid of a contract that David Price had that he's already seen his best kind of days. You start to shed some of that weight that comes off of the salary cap. And if you're the Red Sox, this isn't a move for 2020. This is a move for 2023, 2024. This is a move for your team down the line. Mookie Betts has already gotten you the MVP. He's already gotten you a championship. You know, be thankful that you had him, but understand that this is a move the Red Sox are making for a plan in the future. And actually, I don't mind it because a lot of teams do the opposite. A lot of teams try and get that last year out of a player, and then they say, oh, well, maybe we can sign him for less. Maybe we get a hometown discount, and that doesn't happen a lot of the times, especially if we look at other sports. You look at basketball, it's something that never happens. Because the guy's going to always test free agency. The guy's always going to get more money. And it happens a decent amount in baseball. So kudos to Mookie Betts for trying to get his money. Because as a professional athlete, that's all you have. I mean, yeah, you got the skill, but you got the money. That's the big thing here. And Betts is going to sign a $400 million deal next year. He is. Probably like somewhere in the ballpark of 10 years, $420, $415 million. So from the Red Sox point of view, it's really not a bad deal. Jumping over to the other team in New York really quickly. The Mets just prove over and over again that it's just so hard to be a Met fan in New York sometimes. New York has always been a two-team town, and when you look at some of the teams, Mets are always second to the Yankees, the Islanders are always second to the Dodgers, you know, you got the Jets always second to the Giants, and the Nets always second to the Knicks, even with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving there. That's just how New York breaks down. But there's a reason why these teams are second fiddle, and it's because of the front office just debacles that happen. And in this situation, Steve Cohen was all set to swoop in and save the Mets. And I know a lot of Met fans, this is going to hurt, and it has hurt over this last week, but it was all set to get away from the Wilpons. Fred Wilpon, the owner of the Mets, his family doesn't really want to own the team anymore. They're eventually going to have to give the team up. They're going to sell the team some way, shape, or form. But here comes this guy, Steve Cohen, who was coming in. He was going to spend a lot of money. He was going to get you Mookie Betts. He was going to get you Nolan Arenado. He was going to get you these big-time free agents that made you think you were the Yankees and really turn the Mets into something of a, they're going to be good this year, but a real World Series contender, where this is going to be a place where guys are going to want to come and play because there's going to be so much money to spend. I mean, you're a New York team, and the Wilpons are cheap, which doesn't make any sense. You're a team in New York, and somehow you have cheap ownership. I mean, what? But that was a pipe dream now, because the deal fell through between the Wilpons and Steve Cohen, so now he's not even going to own the team anymore. He's not even going to have a shot at owning any team anymore. John Heyman, an insider for MLB Network, sent out a tweet on Thursday talking about how the deal is dead, it's completely kaput. MLB doesn't blame the Mets, who are expected still to open up the sale in a more typical auction now. Also, after what happened here, the belief is that Stevie Cohen, despite his reported $13 billion, will have trouble ever buying a team, and that just is wrong. Stevie Cohen was ready to come in and just clean house and do everything it needed to do to win for the Mets. I mean, he even talked to the New York media on Friday and said, quote, "I gave it my best shot." The Mets are never going to be the number one team over the Yankees. They're never going to be the number one team in New York. But he wanted to close that gap as much as he could and make the Mets a destination for free agents to want to come, because they're going to get paid. And I'm not talking Bobby Bonilla Day paid. I'm talking about the money that the Yankees just threw at Gerrit Cole paid. I'm talking $400 million for Mookie Betts paid. I'm talking getting Nolan Arenado out of the Rocky Mountains and bringing him into Queens. So that's something that just, you hate to see it, but as a Met fan, it's par for the course. The Wilpons are still there. They're eventually going to have to go somewhere else. But for right now, you're stuck with them. You're stuck with them. I'm sorry. You know, I love college basketball, but it's really frustrated me over the last couple of really years, the way that it's kind of gone down. So I wanted to dive into it. And for that, I brought in Richard J. Adkins. He's a contributor on FanSided and Old North Banter. Got his own podcast, the Juice Podcast. You can check that out. So, Richard, man, thank you for taking the time out and joining me here on Degree of Difficulty.
Thank you for having me, man. It's definitely a pleasure. I'm happy to talk some college basketball, man.
No, absolutely. And Richard, I brought him on because he wrote a piece there for Old North Banter talking a little bit about North Carolina and is it going to be too late for the Tar Heels to make a run potentially to the NCAA tournament. And Richard, the reason why I wanted to have you on was because I liked the story and it talked really about how Cole Anthony coming back was going to maybe be the push that the Tar Heels need. But how much did Cole Anthony's absence really impact North Carolina this season?
I think it impacted it good and bad. I know it's wild to think it could even have a good impact. But the reason I say good, because you have players now that was able to find their shot or find their groove. With Cole Anthony on the court, the offense has been a little bit more stagnant and also don't feed the post as much. But when he was off the court, offense just seemed to flow just a little bit better. And don't get me wrong, Cole Anthony is Cole Anthony, a top three, certainly draft pick. But I feel like it actually has had a benefit for guys like Brandon Robertson, who was hitting career highs this season. So it's iffy. It's on and off with it.
And you talk about Anthony, and he is going to be a highly touted recruit coming into the NBA. And now that he's back, and I know you talked about the offense being a little bit more stagnant, but what does UNC have to do to get into the tournament and even make a run to potentially be there? I mean, they're under 500 right now, but what do they got to do to get into the NCAA?
Well, they're certainly going to need a lot of help. Coming up, they have Duke this Saturday, and then they play Virginia, Notre Dame, Louisville, who is a top five ranked. And then, you know, to pretty much end out the season, NC State and Duke again. So as far as the schedule-wise, it doesn't get any easier. Best case scenario for UNC is at this point is to win the ACC tournament and then they will be automatically dancing. However, for the UNC fans, Tar Heel Nation, I wouldn't totally panic yet. If they could split with Duke, possibly pull off some upsets, a big one against Louisville, then I could see Carolina dancing come March.
Yeah, especially if they can make a deep run in that NCAA tournament. Even if they don't win it, they get some good games here and potentially get something going when it comes down to the tournament time, they might be able to get in. I'm glad you brought that Duke game up because, like you said, they're playing the Blue Devils on Saturday. Duke is ranked 7th in the nation right now. Do you give them any shot in that game on Saturday?
Absolutely. And look, I could be delusional here. I do think when it comes to Carolina and Duke, in seasons past, this has always held true. Doesn't matter the record. These two teams literally hate each other. The bad blood, the rivalry, the best rivalry, in my opinion, in all of sports, talking pro and collegiate. This is going to be a game. Without a doubt in my mind, Carolina can pull off this upset, but it's going to definitely start with attacking the paint. They need guys like Garrison Brooks and Braycott to really have a big rebounding game and making sure they're putting the shots right back up.
Yeah, that is going to be important for the Tar Heels. But while I got you here, Richard, I wanted to ask you, Duke is ranked number 7th. We got a couple teams there. Baylor's the number one team in the nation. But who do you think is the best team in college basketball right now?
Without a doubt, I'm going to have to go Louisville. I think Louisville defense is just flat out ridiculous. 19-3 on the season. I really like Louisville. I gotta give to Louisville. San Diego State, also another good team. Gonzaga is up there, a pretty decent team. But in my opinion, if I can't go Carolina to win it all and I'd be biased, I definitely say Louisville will be cutting the nets come April.
No, and I think Louisville is one of those teams that people look at. Steve Enoch is a big man that transferred actually from UConn, went down there, and he's one of the guys that has really anchored that front line. So it's going to be interesting to see, especially once that ACC tournament comes around. I'm really excited to see that. One of the things, Richard, while I got you here too, was how much, and we talked about Cole Anthony before, but how much does the one-and-done player really negatively impact college basketball? Like I said, you look at Cole Anthony and how UNC has struggled this year with him and then without him, and then you look at someone like James Wiseman, the big man who first got suspended from Memphis, but then just decided to, you know, blow the whole season up and get ready to train for the NBA draft. So these guys that are one-and-done that are coming in just to get their one season, is it really having a negative effect on college basketball? Because I honestly think it is.
I'm back and forth with it. You could definitely see the negative impact when you have guys like a Cole Anthony or guys like Wiseman who comes in. It does bring in a lot of attention, a lot of coverage, but you only have that one player for that one year, and it's kind of hard to build with that. I like more of the traditional route, you know, trying to stay all 4 years and do whatever you want to do to make sure that school wins. But in the day and age we live in, it's just impossible to even think that would happen. You know, money, NBA, and, you know, a whole bunch of different venues now that they're trying to have for players coming out of high school, so that one and done doesn't hurt programs. But, I mean, it does hurt, you know, without a doubt, because the team doesn't really gel. And you have teams that have the same roster going on for all 4 years and maybe more. It definitely helps that program because now you have built an identity over the years. It's hard just to cut nets off of one season and have them one and done. That's why I rarely ever really worked at that.
I agree with that completely. And I mean, when you look at some of the top teams in the nation, a lot of them don't have freshman leaders. They don't have these core group of one and done guys. You look at Dayton sitting at number 6 in the nation, San Diego State undefeated number 4 in the nation. These are teams that have had these crews together, these teams together for 3-4 years. And it really does make an impact. So is it frustrating at all when you watch some of these watered down games compared to what college basketball was like when you had guys staying for 3 years, staying for 4 years, you know, the Jerry McNamara's of the world for Syracuse staying for 4 years and having that longevity and really making the program great? Is it frustrating to see the difference now?
It is frustrating at some parts. However, you do, again, have to understand what some of these kids are thinking. You know, hey, NBA money, let me go ahead and get there now. However, I mean, it is, because you look at the Carolina team like last year. I don't think Carolina team last year was more talented than the team we have this year, but they was definitely more wise, definitely more connected with the Luke Mays of the world, you know, that really, you know, was truly Carolina bread and blood. You know, when you have a Cole Anthony who's just going to be here for 1 year, and credit to Cole Anthony, who did have that knee injury that kept him out, and for him to even want to come back. And this guy is definitely a top 3 lock, in my opinion, is amazing and beyond measurements of the type of character he is. But it's definitely frustrating because you can see it in the level of play. These freshmen, they come in, they think they're the star, they want the ball, they want to shoot the ball, and sometimes they shoot their team out of play. And we see it all the time. So it is frustrating because it does truly affect just the on-court play of it all.
I agree, man. I completely and utterly agree, because when you look at how college basketball used to be, it's a shell of itself really right now.
Definitely. It's gone away. And I think it actually started before college. I think AAU has truly changed the game in good and bad ways. Well, a lot of these guys are teaming up before college. They already kind of getting that experience. Once they get to college, the only thing they're thinking about is the NBA. It's really not taught these days to really stick around and get that true college experience. And again, to each their own. I'm not going to count anybody else's wallet, but it is taking away that that feeling from college sports.
A team that has been able to stay together for a longer time is San Diego State. Now, San Diego State right now, 4th in the nation. We talked about it before, 23-0. Do you see San Diego State running the table, at least in the regular season, to go undefeated out in the Mountain West?
I would like to see it. I love the underdog story. I don't think anyone saw San Diego State being 23-0 before the season started. Yeah, they had a lot of pieces, a lot of people that retained and stayed, like you was stating earlier. But I don't think no one saw 23-0 at this juncture of the season so far. I think San Diego State will be dancing. I definitely will be dancing. I think they will lock up a one seed. However, I don't think they'll make it to like the Elite Eight. I don't think they'll go that far. I think their Cinderella story gets kind of stopped short. So
you see, and I have San Diego State as one of my Final Four teams. So why do you have them, you know, falling a little bit short of that?
That's interesting. So the reason I have San Diego State falling just a little bit before that is because just talent level-wise, far as the experience, the coaching and all that, that is definitely there. And I do think, you know, that's there good enough to make them get to, like, the Sweet 16 and or possibly the Elite Eight, but no farther, because once you get to the Elite Eight, you're talking about these guys. You're talking about talented, talented, talented guys. And I don't think San Diego State has the offensive power to just keep up with some of these guys in this thing. I don't like if they meet up with like a Duke. I can't see them beating them. You know, I don't see it.
I really do appreciate you coming on here. And Richard, I want to get you out on this last question. And it's really funny to me because I saw it before I even messaged you to come on the show. But where did Kanye of sports rants come from? Because I personally laughed when I saw it. I thought it was a great moniker. But where did that come from?
So when I started doing radio interviews and podcasts and everything like that, and I would go on these little rants. And, you know, with Kanye being one of my favorite artists, it's like it just I knew that, you know, I had to do something to mix it in. So, you know, when I start my podcast, for anyone's listening, you can check it out, the Juice Podcast, little plug in there. I always started with the Kanye of all sports rants, and that's because Kanye loves to rant about anything, and I love to rant about sports. So it was like a perfect niche.
Dude, I love that you just did that. That was so great.
I appreciate it.
And gotta ask you though. I said I was on my last one, but I gotta ask you, what's your favorite Kanye album?
Favorite Kanye album, by far, Graduation. Late Registration is up there, College Dropout is up there. But by far, Graduation, that's my album. That's what I'm playing.
My man, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. Hey, man, thank you so much for coming on. Richard J. Atkins, contributor for Fansided and Old North Banter. Like he said, you can check out the podcast, the Juice Podcast, on wherever you get your podcast. Really, it's going to be up on iTunes, Spotify. And if you haven't already, follow him on Twitter at Richard J. Atkins. That's Atkins, A-D-K-I-N-S. Richard J. Atkins on Twitter. Richard, man, thank you so much for the time, and I appreciate you rocking with me.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Well, that's going to do it for me this week. I want to give a big thank you again to Richard J. Atkins. You can find his story, UNC Basketball, Tar Heels Running Out of Time This Season, on Fansided and Old North Banter. Follow him on Twitter at Richard J. Atkins. That's A-D-K-I-N-S, Richard J. Atkins. And while you're at it, follow Degree of Difficulty on Twitter at Degree of D. Subscribe to Degree of Difficulty wherever you get your podcasts. Drop a review, rate 5 stars, you know, all that good stuff. Until then, have a great weekend, everybody. I'll be back next week to chop it up some more. Peace.